Good evening, my darklings. Tonight on the Paranormal 360, we delve into the unexplainable and the uncanny through the eyes of a man who walked the line between law enforcement and the supernatural. Imagine patrolling 27,000 square miles of rugged Navajo land, a place steeped in ancient traditions and whispered legends, where the everyday duties of a Navajo ranger collide with the bizarre and the otherworldly. From reports of UFOs lighting up the night skies to encounters with skinwalkers and Bigfoot, and even chilling cases of livestock mutilations and malicious hauntings, Stanley Milford Jr. didn't just hear these tales, he investigated them. With over two decades of service as a sworn law enforcement officer and leader of the Navajo Rangers Special Projects Unit, Milford approached each case with a clinical mind and the deep cultural understanding of a man born to both Navajo and Cherokee heritage. His new book, The Paranormal Ranger, is already gaining critical acclaim as one of the New York Times' top nonfiction picks for this fall, offering a rare and a chilling look into the world where traditional law enforcement meets ancient supernatural forces. And tonight, joining me on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline is Stanley Milford Jr. to share his journey, his investigations, and his unique perspective on the stories that seem to defy explanation. So get ready, darklings. Tonight, we don't just discuss the paranormal. We're going to explore it through the eyes of someone who's lived it right here on the Paranormal 360. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is our guest. Welcome to the show, Mr. Milford. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Fascinating backstory, fascinating job that you've got, and obviously it's something I think that's going to appeal to a lot of people, getting an insight into the heritage and some of the belief systems that a lot of people don't know or really understand. And I'm just curious, in your growing up and youth, did you have an understanding of the strange and the supernatural from that area, or was that something that came to fruition the older you got?
Actually, I was born on the Navajo Reservation, and when I was about 2 years old, my mother and father separated, and my mother was from Tahlequah, Oklahoma, and so when they separated, she took me and my older sister, Deborah, back to Oklahoma, where we were raised, but we were brought out to the Navajo Reservation each summer and would spend our summer break from school on the Navajo Reservation. So really, from the time I was a child, I was spent time with my great-grandparents and my grandparents, and I learned the Navajo culture through my relatives and stuff. But also growing up in Oklahoma, there was stories that I was brought up with from my mother and my mother's family and people from Tahlequah. That being, you know, that was the Indian territory before it became the state of Oklahoma. So there is a large representation of Native American tribes there, the Kiowa and the five civilized tribes, Cherokee, Choctaw, Seminole, and the Creek. But so I think it was just a process of learning the various aspects of the culture, both cultures.
Does your culture look at these type of things as something supernatural, or... You know, I know to the majority of us, these things fall into that realm of the paranormal, the supernatural. They're outside of our understanding. But it seems like the indigenous peoples, this is more not outside of that realm, but an understanding and a cohabitation of dealing with this.
Very much so. You know, you have a society and a culture where you have medicine men that practice traditional healing ceremonies, to bring tribal members back into harmony in what is known as Hajo on Navajo. So anytime a person is sick or in some way afflicted by some type of illness or something, it's considered the result of being out of balance in some way in in their life. And so that's really the job of a medicine man, is to bring that person back into that balance in their life.
And the concept of spirits, the elementals, the nature sprites or spirits, and things like Bigfoot, aliens, is that something that's treated differently than any other teaching, or is it just, well, this is just part of our culture? These are the things we know and accept as part of life, not outside of the normal realm.
So in the book, I talk about some of the, in some of the interstitial chapters, I talk about the emergent story, creation story of the Navajo people. And so culturally, it is interwoven into the fabric of the Navajo culture, where if you were to come out to the Navajo reservation and we went out to one of the canyon lands and you walk through those canyons and seeing the pictographs and petroglyphs, these rock art paintings, as they are often called by Western culture, but you see this elaborate archive of information that is sometimes hundreds, if not thousands, of years old. And so it is a part of it. It is woven into the culture itself. So
that's part of what I find so fascinating. You know, you look at the fact that, all right, it's woven into your culture. You've depicted it in these cave drawings and the pictogram arts and things that have always been there. But if you look, you know, even from the Christianity standpoint, the Bible is filled with stories of what we would consider supernatural and bizarre, but yet we still shun and kind of push that away as flights of fancy or, you know, maybe metaphorical elements of the story. It's so funny that you have two cultures that have a deep, rich history and storytelling of the strange and unusual, and one group just accepts it as part of what life is. The other pushes that away. And I wonder if that's why there's so much unbalance in more of our culture and the Christianity, is because we're always trying to hang everything on one point as opposed to realizing that all of this is part of life.
Well, just like you said, with this, there's a great many stories within the Bible that would give reference to beings from some other places that come into the earth or come into heaven, and these craft that are traversing the skies, depicted in illustrations within the Bible and other scripture. But I think, you know, with the advent of government that chooses to control the masses and dictate what it is that people are exposed to and what is acceptable and what isn't, you know. I mean, right now we're going through a time where the discussion of disclosure is at hand, you know, coming from our government, but also from like military and airline pilots talking about their experiences and the strange otherworldly phenomenon that they've encountered. But I would dare say if you travel the world and you talked and interviewed individuals from families throughout the world, you'd find that experiences with the so-called paranormal is much more common than it is uncommon. I mean, you could take an individual family, and somewhere within that family, there you'll find somebody that has had an experience, whether it's seeing lights in the sky or entities or UFOs or hauntings or this, you know, what people refer to as Bigfoot or all of these different otherworldly phenomena, you know. So
we need to take a quick break.
My sister says that, well, we can take a break if you need to, and then I'll come back into that.
Okay, perfect. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, too, I want to discuss, obviously, the term skinwalker is very popular because of a few of the different television programs, books, and conversations that are being held. I'd like a more in-depth look into skinwalker. What is the reality that you understand of what that term means, what the definition of these beings are? We'll discuss that and more when we return right here to your home for all things strange and supernatural. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is the Paranormal 360. Welcome back to the program. This is the Paranormal 360. Joining me on the line right now, Navajo Ranger, author, experiencer Stanley Milford Jr. is here. And his brand new book is out and available. We have a link for it on today's program guide, The Paranormal Ranger, a chilling memoir of investigations into the paranormal in Navajo land. All right. You said that your sister had a unique perspective you wanted to share with us just before the break. What was that, Stanley?
She says that the paranormal is very normal, that her view is that mankind has inherited a paranormal world and or a paranormal universe. So these things were already existing before mankind came into the world. And so these experiences of these different entities and things like that were already there well before we came here. So
let's dive into the topic of skinwalker and what does that really mean? I mean, it seems, from my understanding, over the last 18 years, 19 years of talking about the paranormal, I've heard it referred to as, you know, what some would call lycanthropy, you know, like the werewolves. Some would say that it is nothing more than a psychological element of humanity getting in touch with their animal guides or spirit guides. Others say that they're evil entities that are summoned. Some believe that they are the shaman of different native troops. How does this work?
I myself have had an experience in witnessing one of these shape-shifting entities that was actually running on all fours. So I have experienced it, and it is a physical being or a physical entity. From what I understand and what I've learned is that, so there within the Navajo culture there and many indigenous tribes, there is what is referred to as a shape-shifting being that is a result of a person who is practicing a black witchcraft.
Okay.
Similar to that of like what you would find in Satanism and that kind of thing. This is something that is very dark. It's rooted in evil practices and causing harm to others. So this individual that is practicing this stuff is capable of transforming from a human form into that of an animal form. In this case, you know, I'd come home from college during, at the time I was going to school in Kansas, college in Kansas, and I'd come home from the summer and where I would work during the summertime. And I'd gone to the movies one night to watch a Stephen King movie real late, and the movie Maximum Overdrive. I've always been a big fan of hard rock and heavy metal music, that had an AC/DC soundtrack, so I went to the movie to see this movie, when the movie let out, it was around midnight. It was really late, and when I came into the lobby area, there was an elderly man that was sitting on a bench in the lobby, and him and I struck up a conversation, and he asked if I could give him a ride back to one of the towns, which happened to be where I lived, and so I agreed. I said, yeah, I'll give you a ride, and I did. So I took him where he wanted to be dropped off, and out in this kind of remote area on a long stretch of highway, I dropped him off, and I turned around and started back the other direction toward home. And as I was driving on the highway, this long stretch of straight highway, there was something that was moving on the inside of the right-of-way fence as I was driving. and I kept glancing over that way to try to see what this might be. It was keeping up with the vehicle as I'm driving a highway speed, and it ends up jumping the fence and getting closer and closer to the vehicle. And at one point, when it was within several feet of the passenger side of the vehicle, I was able to get a clear view of this, and it was running on all fours. It appeared similar to what we see today as a greyhound, like these race dogs. It was all white from head to toe. It had a long canine-like snout. This thing had a mouthful of jagged teeth. And one of the most notable things about this thing was its eyes. At one point, I looked that direction, and I locked eyes with this thing, which it had eyes the color of the exit signs that you see at the movie theaters, that bright orange,
right,
fluorescent color.
Okay.
Its eyes were like that, like they were self-illuminated. And it's looking right at me. And at that point, when I seen this thing eye to eye, I slid down in the driver's seat, and I didn't look back in that direction. I didn't look in my rearview mirrors, and I don't know what it did at that point.
Now, was your passenger aware of this as well?
There was no passenger there. I had already dropped the elderly man off.
All right.
So it was just me in the vehicle. And so I came sliding into the driveway at the house and went running. I ran in, and I was kind of out of breath. And my dad was still up, and he asked me, you know, what was wrong? What happened? And I explained what I'd seen, and that's when he told me, son, that's a skinwalker. That's what you've seen.
Now, and, do these beings, are they only kind of limited to a wolf, or can they turn into different creatures?
You know, various tribes have various descriptions. I had heard stories growing up in Oklahoma of where a man was a practicing witch, and he ended up being shot and killed, but it was the form of an owl that he had been changed form into. So from what I understand, you know, you hear the term skinwalker, and what it comes from is an individual who takes the skin of an animal and uses that and cloaks herself in it and actually transforms into that of that particular skin or animal. So,
but usually the representations of these creatures are something that you would consider more of an evil entity.
Right, right. Okay. And I had learned early on that this practice of shape-shifting was actually used as a tool of war long, long, long ago, when the Navajos were at war with the Mexican people and the Ute tribe and the various tribes that were in that particular region. When they would be at war, they would use this to travel great distances almost instantaneously and use this ability against their enemies. But today it's almost all done for an evil purpose, to harm others.
Now, when you hear of cases of these dogmen that are being witnessed, yes, throughout the United States,
yeah,
or even Sasquatch,
right,
do the indigenous tribes believe that these are forms of skinwalkers and that they can change shape and form, or, which would explain how they're there one minute, gone the next, where do you come down on that?
Well, if you look globally, you know, the references to what people refer to as Bigfoot, you know, there's the Yeti and in the Himalayan mountains, and you have the Yowie and in Australia, and Swamp Ape and Sasquatch, and all of these different descriptions of almost an identical type of being or creature. And I tend to, you know, Jonathan Dover, who was my partner all those years in the Special Projects Unit and as a lieutenant working for the Navajo Ranger, him and I come to this idea that all of these things are interrelated by dimension, that the Bigfoot doesn't live out there in the woods like some people speculate, John and I have lived in the woods at times on assignments, and we've been out there. And you don't see the evidence of this thing living out there like you would see the evidence of a bear or a mountain lion or any other wild animal that's out there. You just don't find the evidence of that. So we tend to lean toward the idea of the connection through interdimensional, whether it's UFOs or ghosts or these other things.
When we come back, we have to take another quick break here. When we come back, I'd like to push on that a little bit more. Could it be that if these things have the ability to shift from a human form to an animal form and maybe more than one, could it just be constantly evolving, changing shapes into smaller creatures, things that would allow them to hide? Or are there rifts? Are there these thin portals between our universe and another that we and other beings have crossed through? We'll talk with our guest, the paranormal ranger Stanley Milford Jr., when we return right here to the Paranormal 360. We're back. This is the Paranormal 360. You can tune in here on WCCO every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Producer Jonathan Lowe, me, your host Dave Schrader, we take you through the journey of the unseen. You can join us 7 to 9 p.m. And if you can't listen to the entire show live, make sure you go to the WCCO website where you can tune into the podcast version of the show. Not only does Jonathan post the entire episode, but he also puts up some fun clips that you can check out there as well. So go check that out for yourself. Joining us right now, the Paranormal Ranger is here for the remainder of this hour and through the next. His new book, The Paranormal Ranger, A Navajo Investigator's Search for the Unexplained, is out and available. We have a link for it on the podcast guide. So before the break, Stanley, I brought up the fact of the skinwalker, and you had talked about multidimensional or ultra-dimensional beings that exist. Do you think that there's a chance that skinwalkers have the ability to turn into different beings, different creatures? Could they run a gamut? Could they run through two or three different forms, go from a Bigfoot to something smaller like a deer or maybe even a rabbit, so that is the way that they can get away and not be seen? Or do you think they really are just stepping from our reality into another?
Well, one thing that I do want to touch upon is the fact that at one time I did this investigation into a haunting occurring at an office space, and within that office space, so I went in and conducted an investigation with three other investigators, a total of four of us. And one of the phenomena that I seen with my own eyes was what is referred to as a port, APPORT.
Sure.
So in that particular case, we had coins that would materialize out of thin air, just and 2 days, 66 coins appeared, and of those 66, I witnessed at least 10 coins just simply falling out of nothingness, out of thin air, into the floor. And sometimes they would come flying across the room. But witnessing this phenomenon firsthand with my own eyes, it made me and John analyze this and look at this and realized that this idea of other dimensions or other planes of existence, that there was something to it. And in our investigations over the years, like I said, in regards to the Bigfoot phenomenon, we didn't feel that this was something that was living in our forests like bears and mountain lions and coyotes and things of this nature, but that it was coming across from some other plane of existence into our physical world. People would witness this thing. It would leave evidence like foot tracks, hair, things like that. But we really felt that these other phenomena were doing the same thing. Things like UFOs were being seen, but they were coming into our physical atmosphere and environment from some other location, and people were witnessing the effects of these kind of things. But then it would cross over. And I do feel that these things that people refer to as skinwalkers or shapeshifters, that they are entities that are capable of manipulating and using that dimension to travel. And also what you mentioned about shapeshifting into other forms. And I think there really it's an infinite possibility with these things. What they're capable of.
Did you notice, Stanley, the coins that came through, were they coming from any specific era of time, a specific date range? And were the coins American coins, foreign coins? What could you tell me about it?
In the investigation and the haunting for 2 days, all of those coins were U.S. coins, nickels, pennies, dimes, and quarters. One unusual thing about the coins is that they behave like any other coin you could take out of your pocket and flip into the air, how they would hit and maybe make a big arc and spiral and come in, fall over. Out of all of the coins, all 66, they all landed heads up. And you know, and I know out of statistics and probability, that's not going to happen. It's right. Not natural. It's not going to happen that way. So in some way they were, once they appeared, they were further manipulated where they would land heads up. There was a high incidence or frequency of coins that were what is referred to as a wheat cent penny. You know, the Lincoln wheat cent penny.
Right.
I think there was a total of 7 or 8 maybe within the 66. So that is an unusual amount of these coins. But we analyzed the coins from all angles, the metallurgy. There was nothing that really stood out. One thing was that I come to the understanding that this was spirit that was manipulating these coins, and they were simply, this spirit is simply letting me know that they're present, that they're, you know, heads up, I'm around. The phenomenon with the coins immediately followed the investigators, all four investigators, to their homes. We were experiencing the coins in our residence. And so that occurred in 2009. And just maybe 4 weeks ago, I did a presentation in a town called Farmington, New Mexico, and for a library there, a public library. And during that time, a friend of mine who was an investigator during some of these investigations came up from the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And so there was a total of 25 coins appeared while he was around. So it continues to happen to this very day. It happens in my home, happens in my bedroom. I'm still, to this day, I'm still investigating the coin reports in and around. It can happen anywhere.
Have you thought of asking out to the universe, can we start dropping dollar bills, please?
Well, you mentioned that, but during the original investigation, one of the investigator's brother was very skeptical of all of this that was being alleged. And him and his mother came and visited one of the investigators at their home one day, and the coins were happening in that home. Me and one of the investigators went over to that home, and this older brother says, well, hell, if it's going to throw coins, at least it could throw bills.
Right.
And he no more than said that, and the instant he got that said out of his mouth, a wadded-up bill came flying across the room and hit his mother right in the cheek.
Wow.
And I happened to be sitting next to her. I leaned over, and I picked up that bill and unfurled it, and it had the letters D-I-E on that bill.
Wow.
And the E was like a pitchfork. So apparently whatever this entity or source of energy didn't like his sarcastic comment about the bill.
Oh,
so, yeah.
Stanley Milford Jr., our guest. We have to take another quick break. When we come back, I want to start talking about these investigations. As you're representing law enforcement, you're somebody that's going out to, you know, deal with things that we would think of on a normal basis. How often are your calls regular calls, and how often are the calls involving what we would call the supernatural? We'll talk about that and more right here on WCCO. If you have a question, a thought, a concept that you'd like to share with us tonight on the program, 651-461-9226. That's the Stiles Financial Talk and Text Line. That's right. You can text in your questions, and I will refer to them as the episode progresses. You're listening to the Paranormal 360 right here, right now. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Stanley Milford Jr., our guest, and he will be with us into the next hour. Stanley, I mentioned the fact you're law enforcement, you're a Navajo Ranger, you're working. How many of the calls that you deal with are normal law enforcement calls as opposed to strange supernatural claims?
Well, actually, I retired back in 2023 from the Navajo Nation. But at the time that I was working, really, when John and I was working with the Special Projects Unit, together from about the year 2000 to about 2011 when John retired. Those were the most active years. And from one part of the year to the next, it would fluctuate. Sometimes it would be pretty much call after call coming in regards to various phenomena and various investigations. And then at other times, you might not hear calls coming in for months at a time, and it just varied.
Would it vary in the sense too that this night you started getting calls? There were witnesses of strange craft or lights, and some were witnessing ghostly activity, some were witnessing creature activity, or was it always, you know, when things were popping, it was always kind of one element of the supernatural?
Well, actually, it was a lot of different phenomena. Across the board, there was no, you know, for the Navajo Nation, I think a majority of those calls probably were either UFO related sightings or Bigfoot sightings, but really it could be anything. It could be something involving the witchcraft. It could be something involving a haunting, or, you know, it could be anything. So,
all right. Did you find that there was more of like the skinwalker creature cryptid type of calls overall? Or again, was it just a mixed myriad of different things?
You know, I think for that area, you know, that being 27,000 square miles, that's like the size of the state of West Virginia. And I think probably the most popular call that would come in was probably a Bigfoot-related call.
Is there a danger with these creatures, especially the Bigfoot-style creatures? I've heard through my history of interviewing and speaking with people, everything from they're just benevolent creatures that are part of that area, like guardians. I've heard others that say that they're cannibalistic. They're, you know, they're not friendly, and that a lot of the indigenous tribes know them, recognize them, see them as just another tribe, but avoid them at all costs.
Right. And I think it runs the gamut from one side of the spectrum to the other. I never seen physical evidence of where these things attacked any human being, although there was deaths of wildlife and livestock at times that may not have a plausible explanation for what caused the death of the animal. You have people like Theodore Roosevelt, one of our presidents, who in one of his books described what people today associate with an attack of a Bigfoot that killed one of these trappers up in the mountainous areas like Montana. So, in what is described, I think it's more than capable of taking the life of a human being, given its size and strength, but just the same with the haunting related activity. I think these spirits, you know, I think in some situations have shown that they are quite capable of taking a human life, whether there's an actual homicide or murder that's committed by these entities. that, I don't know. I haven't witnessed that firsthand, so I'm not sure. Although, in one of the investigations I did do, so one of the investigators were experiencing the activity at their home. We went over there for the day, and I was walking into the kitchen area, and the homeowner was right behind me a couple of feet. And as I stepped into the kitchen, in the kitchen it has a large island countertop. And over on one side, you had these kitchen knives, you know, your cutlery, that were in this box. And a knife, a 12-inch butcher knife, flew out of that block of knives and flew 8 feet right in front of me and went right through a grapefruit that was in one of these fruit baskets that hangs from the ceiling. And so it definitely demonstrated that if it chose to attack or injure me or the other investigators, that it could have done that quite easily. So
we have less than a minute left together. When we come back after the top of the hour, I want to talk about some of your most compelling cases, the things that you've investigated, seen firsthand, and what it's like to actually be somebody boots on the ground seeing these things, and what can we do about it. I also would like to talk about burial mounds. There are burial mounds that are spread throughout the United States, and they all seem to have some kind of protector, for lack of a better term. And I'd like to get any insight you might have on what that is. And is it something that predates humanity? Is it part of the world itself? Or are your ancestors involved? We'll talk about that and much more with our guest, Stanley Milford Jr., when we return right here on your home for all things strange and supernatural. This is the Paranormal 360 with Dave Schrader.